11 minutes after 9. You've got it on KHUM. And our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign resumes. We are dealing with the topic this week of sexualized violence in Humboldt County. Yesterday, Paula Arrowsmith-Jones was my guest, and we kind of talked in general terms about the issue. Today, we're focusing a little bit more narrowly. We're looking at the trim scene here in Humboldt County. It's that time of year. A lot of folks are taking some part-time work in the agricultural business.
They are. And, you know, it's an important part of our local economy. Wherever people stand on the issue, the reality is that it's happening.
Absolutely. A major part of our economy. And we're not going to be, you know, looking at or judging any of that legality. What we're going to be looking at is, I guess, the circumstances that... because there is, you know, it is an illegal activity, there has to be an element of isolation with this. And because of that, it kind of gives the opportunity, if you will. It doesn't necessarily make this is going to happen, but it at least opens the door to opportunity where there can be abuses.
That's right. It opens that opportunity for exploitation. And it creates barriers for survivors who are harmed to be able to come forward and talk about it.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, of course, you know. But the thing is, even if you were involved in an activity that may not be legally sanctioned, if you are sexually violated, if you are assaulted, you certainly have the right, you know, to come forward.
You do. You have the right to either report to law enforcement if you choose to, or at least to find supportive services. And we at Rape Crisis, at the North Coast Rape Crisis Team, want the community to know that we support survivors 100% in making that decision for themselves. The thing is that we want to talk about today is that, in part, is how the barrier of isolation around the grow industry and trimming in particular makes it even more challenging for survivors to come forward, even for social services, let alone to go to law enforcement.
So being at North Coast Rape Crisis, you probably have dealt with this sort of thing before. And it's hard to quantify something that isn't reported, but do you have any kind of idea how much of this is not reported?
Well, overall sexual assault, it's estimated that only about 10% of sexual assaults are reported to law enforcement.
In general.
And you know that then when you add additional issues of isolation, of marginalization, however that might happen. So, for example, it's harder for people of color to come forward because they already know that they might face racism. It's harder for people who are living on the street without homes because they already know that people might judge them or blame them in some way. So whatever the marginalization is, it's going to be that much harder for people to come forward. And when you're talking about something within the grow industry, not only are there the fears of legal repercussions coming back on the survivor or the assailant, and they may be worried about that in terms of the community response, particularly if they're in a community where there are many people involved in the industry. They may feel like if they come forward and name somebody, that that could create a lot of negative backlash for the community in general. So people tend to feel like it's not okay to talk about it. One of the issues that we've seen multiple times are students, college students, who are using trimming as a part of their way of making their way through school without taking on even more debt. And understandable that they would make that choice. And then they might go to work for somebody that turns out not to be somebody that they can trust. And then there they are, trimming or maybe assisting with an indoor grow, and somebody exploiting that situation, knowing that, hey, I can rape you, and what are you going to do about it? Are you really going to go forward and say that you're involved in this illegal activity?
We should probably point out that you know, the vast majority of these operations do not involve some kind of abuse like this. But
I certainly hope so.
But the opportunity, of course, is there because of the isolation, because of the illegal element of the thing. And, you know, what you mentioned about students helping to, you know, take care of their debt load and whatnot. I mean, I know many who do that.
Right? Yeah.
It's a normal part of being out here.
That's right. And again, we're not judging that on this mm-hmm. program. We're just here to talk about that if someone was in that situation, we at North Coast Rape Crisis Team would want that person to know that if they find themselves exploited in some way, if somebody is harming them in that environment, that they deserve support and that we would be there to support them and not judge the situation they're in, because that's not what created the rape. It's that a rapist exists and uses that situation of vulnerability to take advantage of somebody.
I know of people who go back to the same folks every year, have done mm-hmm. it for a number of years, and you know, they've got kind of an ongoing relationship at that point. But there are lots, you know, hundreds of people who enter this every year.
Yeah.
And I guess what we should probably put out there is, you know, warning signs to be aware of. Mm-hmm. You talked yesterday when we were off air about an ad that you saw that one person was looking for, you know, young females.
Right. They were specifically looking for young females to come and trim for them. And there was an ad that even
that should be a red flag.
Yeah. There was an ad that went so far as to say attractive young women that they were looking for. So, yeah, hopefully we would, any of us would look at that and say, okay, so what's up with that? And again, even if somebody saw that ad, took a job for that person, and then that person harmed them, it still would not be the survivor's fault. They're going to work for somebody, and that other person is making a choice to exploit them. Just as a risk reduction strategy, we could say that if we're seeing an ad like that, we could be suspicious of motives.
Right. I mean, it may not be nefarious, but it certainly does raise a red flag. It's like,
yeah.
Wait a minute, the person's looks has nothing to do with the job they're going to be doing.
Right.
That's a red flag.
Right, exactly. Why would that be a necessary requirement?
Right.
Now, I have heard some folks in the industry say that one of the reasons that they specifically select women to trim is not only do we tend to be reliable employees, but also because there are situations of violence that happen within the industry when someone unknown comes in, and that the violent takeover, say, of a grow or something, especially we're talking about small, you know, in-home kind of burglaries that happen in small grows, that that's more likely to happen with a guy that you've brought into the scene without knowing his credentials, mm-hmm. so to speak. And so I have heard that from some folks, that is why they're seeking women as opposed to targeting them. However, I would just suggest to folks looking at those ads just to be cautious and know that if you're harmed, it's not your fault and you deserve our support.
So I guess other things that you can be aware of, there are certain things that can lead to problems, don't necessarily will, but can, if you don't have your own transportation. If you are mm-hmm. out at this trim scene and you are driven to it and you don't have your own transportation, you're sort of trapped there.
Exactly, and that comes up a lot with some large grows that are far out in the wilderness, basically, and you don't have a way in or out. And we have heard of situations and supported people who've been in that type of situation. And maybe it's not even the person who they're working for, but one of the other trimmers who then exploits that situation of isolation. And it might start with kind of sexual harassment, innuendo, kind of creeping into somebody's space, and testing and checking out if there's going to be a real clear boundary set, and then finding their way to target that person when maybe it's just the two or three people that are, you know, housed together out somewhere in a lean-to. And I can imagine that being very frightening for the person who's being targeted, because if you tried to set a very clear boundary, you also know that there's the social pressure of trying to get along with people. And while you certainly have a right to set that clear boundary and have that boundary expected, I think we shouldn't be surprised if that's hard for someone to do in that situation.
It's kind of interesting. We run ads for automated trimmers here on this station. And one of the selling points of these automated trimmers is that, you know, you're not, you know, having to, you know, have flaky people staying at your place, you know, drinking all your beer, hitting on your wife, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, wow, okay. that is an interesting thing that I never thought of. But if you're, I mean, certainly the abuse can go in the other direction, as you mentioned.
Right. So you could have somebody come into the situation. And we know that, you know, a lot of folks, like you said, they're working with the same people every year, and you establish a bond, a working relationship, and oftentimes a friendship. And that something could still go wrong in that situation.
Sure. But it's certainly friends in just the normal, average, everyday world.
Right. Because like we talked about yesterday, rape is almost always happening where the two people know each other, right? Mm-hmm. And you're in a situation of some trust with that person. So we know that that could happen. And certainly it increases the odds of something difficult happening if you're bringing in folks that you don't know and don't know what their background or what their attitudes are. But I think the important thing for people to keep in mind is that it's not different than the way that sexual assault dynamics would work out in any kind of setting, except adding the issue of isolation that creates more vulnerability and more barriers. So the human-to-human dynamics are the same in terms of somebody trying to find a way to target another human being. And then, you know, it's just important to think about these additional vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. What would you say to someone who, let's say she is a young college student trying to earn a little extra money and is involved in the trim scene, and it starts getting very uncomfortable, something starts happening. What kind of advice would you give to her?
Well, the first thing is to really trust your gut. And that's the same thing that we'd say to everyone. And if something is feeling sketchy, it probably is. And then one, of course, has to wrestle with, so I have this feeling, now what do I do? So if they're in a situation where they're not completely isolated out in the woods, they may have the opportunity to decide to leave that employment, even though it's costly to them. And that's not an easy decision, but it's a decision that some people find that they have to make. Or they build, people have talked to us about building ally relationships with the other trimmers. If there's a boss or another trimmer who's creating a problem, kind of building a sense of community, checking in with other, especially other females.
Helps break the isolation.
Yeah, and to say, so I have this weird feeling, and how is it for you? And sometime when they come together, what ends up happening is the sketchy person is asked to leave. Now, that's not always safe to do that. So I'm not here to tell people what they should do, but just some ideas of things that people have done.
If
they're out in that very isolated, remote area, then I would suggest possibly thinking about, generally speaking, someone comes from time to time to check in on folks. And when that happens, considering, is it really safe for me to stay here, or should I hitch a ride out? And again, that's not an easy decision because money is involved and fear of retaliation in one form or another, and that's real. So trusting your own gut on what is the safest thing for you to do, and knowing that no matter what happens, it's the violent person who's creating the problem situation.
Yeah, it's not you.
Right.
You brought up one thing, and I think it's real important to touch on, and that's trusting your feelings. It's kind of an interesting thing. You know, we as human beings operate on different conscious levels, and there, you know, our subconscious is constantly surveying the situation, and so often you will get this feeling that something is wrong when there's absolutely nothing that you can see consciously. What's causing me to feel this? But I'm just not feeling comfortable. Something is wrong. And oftentimes your subconscious is picking up on various different things and giving you little warnings. And those things really should be heeded.
Right. And it's difficult too, because we're kind of socialized to ignore them. Particularly women have been socialized to ignore our instincts and be polite and get along and always be the kind of the coming from that giving place. And there's nothing wrong with being kind and polite and all those things. But just to know that if you've got that funny feeling, if the hair's on the back of your neck or standing up, or you just, I don't know, somewhere in your body, just feel like, I really don't feel okay here. It is important to know, to honor that in yourself.
Now let's go past the possibilities and go to it happened. Because it does.
Yes, it does.
It does happen. There's, you know, sexual assault that does happen in these situations, happens in many situations, but this is the one in particular we're focusing on. What advice would you give to someone who has been through this? They've survived. Mm-hmm. They've been through it. They're now away from the situation.
Well, one thing we'd want them to know is that we're here to support, to listen, believe, not to judge, not to try to think that we would know what they should think or feel or do, but really to try to create a safe enough space where they can manifest their own healing, because that healing comes from inside, and it is possible for each survivor to find that. I think for them to know that it really is not their fault, and that's not just a cliche. It's what we really mean, that there isn't a situation where someone chose for this to happen to them. And that we understand that they might feel some sense of responsibility because of the situation they were in. But again, that them taking a job is not what created the rapist. The rapist existed, and they exploited a situation. So for the survivor to really know that whatever shame, embarrassment, upset that they are carrying, all of that really belongs to the rapist, not to them. And what often happens for survivors is we pick it up. We say, you know, we feel the shame and the blame and judge ourselves, versus realizing that that shame actually needs to be attached to people who create violence. And if they could face that and change something in themselves, the rest of us wouldn't have to be avoiding them.
Now, you were saying that only 10% of sexual assaults are reported to the police, and most likely even less when it's in a situation like this. Do you suggest that people do report to the police?
We at Rape Crisis take a neutral position, because there are so many reasons why people don't report, and there are many reasons why people do report. So we think it's important for the person to know that it is their choice, and that to think about what is it that they are trying to achieve for themselves. So for some people, the act of reporting is a way that they gain a sense of justice and a being able to just say, this happened to me, and here, hand that kind of responsibility to the criminal legal system. And so it can be very powerful. For other people who are hoping and invested or have an expectation of the outcome, often they feel a sense of betrayal and let down. And I think that the panel on Friday will probably talk some more about that, as you have some advocates here. But to know that it's so unpredictable what will happen.
It is. And even though there have been big changes in the way these are dealt with in the courts, there was constant victim blaming going, yes. Look how this person dressed, look at this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, this person invited this behavior.
Right.
While that has been addressed a lot, it's still a big risk, and there is still some of that.
Right. And proving something that probably happened in private beyond a reasonable doubt is challenging. And I don't want to sound like I'm discouraging people from mm-hmm. reporting. It's just that we believe that it really does need to be each survivor's decision. And what often happens is someone will say to the survivor, well, if you don't report and he or she assaults again, then it's your fault. You're going to feel like it's your fault. And we would hope that people would stop saying that to survivors. If a rapist rapes again, that is on their shoulders. And let's say I survived a rape and I went and I reported. I have no idea what the outcome of that will be. It's not a guarantee that that rapist will be held accountable and will not assault another person. And so, again, I'm not discouraging or encouraging, but just to say that it isn't really, it's not based in reality, and it's not fair to put that responsibility on the survivor as if it's their job to keep somebody else safe, when in actuality, it's the job of the person creating the violence.
So basically what you're saying is, number one, take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
So if you have gone through this kind of a violation, it's probably, I mean, I assume that it is always better to talk to an organization such as Rape Crisis rather than just dealing with it yourself.
I think in general that's true, that for most people, I think what's important is you need a way to get it kind of from the inside to the outside. Mm-hmm. And for many, many people, that's going to be finding someone they can trust to talk to. And a lot of times it is helpful if it's an organization or someone outside of your close sphere, because we don't have a stake in those personal issues that a well-intended friend or family member, for example, might have feel that reporting or not reporting is absolutely the right thing to do and might pressure somebody. So, of course, to have trusted friend and family is great, and then to also maybe look for that outside entity such as ours that can be maybe a little bit more in a kind of neutral or more objective place. And also, we know how the systems work, and so we can make sure that people know what their rights and their choices are.
Having something like this happen to you, this kind of violation, is so outside the bounds of normal.
Yeah.
I know for a fact, in talking with people over the years, that some people are very effectively can just compartmentalize the pain mm-hmm. and the trauma and shove it away in mm-hmm. a part of their mind where they're just not dealing with it. But I have found that generally at some point those boxes leak and it generally comes out somewhere. And whether or not this trauma happened a day ago or decades ago, it's generally good to talk to someone about it.
Yeah, and we experience that a lot, and something we'd want the community to know is it's never too late to reach out. It's never too late to tell your truth. And we hear from people that were hurt 40, 50 years ago.
Sure.
Maybe they were hurt as a child, and now later in life they've realized that they've carried this burden all by themselves all their life, and they would like the opportunity to say, here, this is what really happened to me. And so we do hear from folks that, you know, months, years, decades later, just need to be able to say, this is what really happened. And we're there to listen and believe them.
I can talk from personal experience that taking large emotions and boxing them away generally can take a lot of other good stuff along with it.
That's right.
When I was younger, I had I would get angry to a point where I was enraged, and it scared me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never hurt anyone, but it scared me that I had that in me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I made a promise to Amy that I would never get that angry again. And I boxed it away and did for like about 10 years. And I found that that the other side of that anger was my passion. And so all my passion was boxed away along with it.
Yeah, and we hear that from survivors, that they feel like they lose themselves. And, you know, that boxing away that you're talking about is sometimes a necessary coping strategy.
Absolutely.
And so no one should feel bad about that. It's not a negative. They needed to do that.
It just doesn't generally work long term.
Right. Over time, if people can give themselves controlled spaces and ways, which is why people come to things like support groups or counseling or use our 24-hour hotline, it's to say, I'm going to take this amount of time and I'm really going to put it out there. And then I'm going to do some grounding and get myself okay to cope with all the other parts of my life. And what they find over time more and more is they get to have access to their whole self. Because you're right, sometimes you lose something that is your joy in life.
Right.
While you're trying to isolate this incident inside yourself. And so being able to get it on the outside then lets you kind of open that door and rediscover the whole self that someone is and deserves to be. You know, we all deserve to have that joy and passion and all good things, and not have to sacrifice all of that in order to function.
Well, folks need to know that North Coast Rape Crisis Team is there and available 24 hours, 7 days a week. And whether, as I said, whether an incident happened, you know, moments ago or a lifetime ago, it's always good to know that you guys are there to help. And why don't you give out the number?
And to serve people of all ages and all genders as well. And so our number here in Humboldt is 707-445-2881, and in Del Norte County, 707-465-2581. And counselors are available 24 hours a day, as are advocates should someone need assistance at a hospital, at going to a law enforcement interview, if people are looking for resources and connections, or they just simply want to have someone on the other end of the line to be present with them while they share whatever it is that they need to share at that time, whether it's talking about the incident or talking about how they're doing today or just needing someone on the line while they express their feelings. That's what we're there to do.
Paula Arrowsmith-Jones, thanks again.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And we'll continue our dialogue on the overarching topic of sexualized violence in Humboldt County tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and our guest is going to be Jessica Pettit.